Hey folks, make sure to stick around for the outro after today's interview.
Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
Well, several years ago, I read a book with a team of woven leaders called A Praying Life by Paul Miller. And I don't know if some of you listeners can relate, but there are just a handful of books for me that make their way onto the shelf space by my bedside table. And this book that we're going to be talking about today, A Praying Life, is one of those books. So if you have never read it, go put it in your Amazon cart, or if you have read it, I challenge you to pick it up and flip back through it after this podcast. And because of how this book has so impacted me and the nonprofit ministry Woven that I lead, I wanted to share more about it with you, our audience. So there is actually a ministry that works in conjunction with this book. So today we're excited to have Adam Barker, the Southwest coordinator of A Praying Life, on the show. So again, Adam, we're thrilled to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Whitney, thank you. I've listened to a lot of podcasts, but it's fairly new for me to be on this side of the microphone. So it's a little bit nervous, but at the same time, I'm excited because I love to share, how God's using our ministry in the book. But a little bit about me. So we live not too far from you. So we're north of Dallas. We're still Texas. We're up in Sherman. And I married my high school sweetheart. Been married 23 years now. In fact, on her Valentine card yesterday, I just wrote, it's our 27th Valentine together.
Wow. And,
yeah, it's crazy. It flies by. So our young ones are not so young anymore. We have two boys, 18 and 16, and then my little girl is 14. And my oldest is actually in his first year of college up at OSU in Oklahoma.
Wow, that's so fun. Are you enjoying this stage with kids grown? Is it a stage that you feel like I'm sure it's very different than the stage I'm in with younger kids. What's one of the best things about it?
You know, honestly, so we're actually in an easier stage. Like all three of them are following the Lord and love the Lord. Still challenges, don't get me wrong, but like when they were younger, they were harder, especially my oldest, and he'd admit that himself. And so yeah, it's really a sweet season. Like God's really been good. And even with him going to college, I told him before he left, one of those, dad looking in the eyes moments. I said, Jonah, if I weren't your dad, I would want to be your friend. And it's been really fun. Just that friendship, just developing in our relationship. So it's been good. God's been really gracious to us.
I love that. It's good to hear too, somebody who's a little bit further on the parenting journey, just to know, not to be scared of that season, that there are sweet parts of it that I get to look forward to. So I appreciate you sharing that, but I'd love for us just to dive into the book, A Praying Life. And I want to know just more about what led you to it and how it has intersected your life in a meaningful way.
So about 6 years ago, I was listening to a sermon, and I've been a pastor 22 years, but listening to somebody that really was encouraging to me, and they quoted this guy, Paul Miller, and I'd never heard of him. And I looked it up, and actually they were quoting his book, A Loving Life. But when I Googled Paul Miller, I found the book, A Praying Life. And I immediately ordered it, and I was excited. I've read a lot of books on prayer, but this one was completely different. I'd never read a book on prayer like this specifically. So that was kind of my first intro to the book. So immediately, I gave it to Mandy after I finished reading it, and she loved it. In fact, it's been one of my wife's most recommended books as well. And that summer I walked with it with two of my leaders at church. a few months later, we were at the Gospel Coalition with our church staff, and I got the chance to meet Bob Allums. And so he's a Praying Life director. And we still laugh about it today, but I very awkwardly, every time there was a break in between speakers, I would come out and hang out with Bob and give him a hug. And like, just, I was just drawn to him. I love not just the ministry, but if you meet Bob, he has a very contagious laugh. And so he's just full of joy. You can see the spirit at work in him. And so now, little did I know then, and wasn't even on my radar, that 6 years later, I would be making a prayer card that literally says, "God, can I work for a Praying Life? Will you let me work for a Praying Life?" And so here I am. So yeah, the book has not just impacted my personal life, my own prayer life, my own walk with God, but I mean, really changed the direction of my ministry. And so it's been a good season. Just kicking off with a Praying Life, and I'm excited about what God has planned.
That's really cool. Well, I love that you kind of had a fan moment where you kind of embarrassed yourself and just kept hugging him. And I love that you guys still get to have an ongoing relationship. Sometimes in those moments you think, oh, well, I'll never probably see this person again. So I made a fool of myself, but here later you now still have an ongoing relationship with him, which is pretty cool. So I want to talk about some of the key takeaways and quotes from this book, because again, I really hope and pray that our listeners are encouraged to go read this book for themselves, because I think it has something for everyone. But I'd love for us just to kind of dive into some key takeaways and quotes. So maybe you can get us started and we can just kind of go back and forth about some things that have impacted us specifically about this book in particular.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this and looking through the book, like 50 different things came across my mind. But I think the one that's not just a big piece of the book, but was most impactful for me, actually still is most impactful for me, is just the whole takeaway of just coming to God helpless. There's a quote in the book where Paul Miller reads Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." Then he goes on, "The criteria for coming to Jesus is weariness. Come overwhelmed with life. Come with your wandering mind. Come messy." And I had known this, but everything in me fought and honestly still fights helplessness. I've always tried to do it on my own strength. And so so this was very freeing for me and changed not just how I saw prayer, but how I begin to live life in prayer.
I love that. I think it's interesting you said that, because one of the things I had written on my book as I was just pulling it back out again and looking for it, looking through it just to kind of, as I was preparing for this interview, one of the things I underlined too was that whole concept of coming to God in desperation. He says on page 43, he actually has a little part that says prayer equals helplessness. And he said, why not at one point? He's kind of saying, you know, why was I not seeing or why was I not actually going to the Lord in prayer? And he says, because I was not helpless. I could manage our prayer ministry on my own. And it was kind of the irony that he was not praying about his prayer ministry. And he said earlier on the page, in other words, I did not feel helpless. I knew what to do. And then on the next page, it says prayer mirrors the gospel. In the gospel, the Father takes us as we are because of Jesus and gives us his gift of salvation. In prayer, the Father receives us as we are because of Jesus and gives us his gift of help. So I love that. I love thinking about that and encouraging people again who are listening that our helplessness ought not to be something that causes us to be ashamed to go to God in prayer, but it actually is the driving force behind our prayers. So that's a cool takeaway that I identified as well. What are some other things that you still remember that you and your wife talk about?
Well, actually, on that note, I think about 6 years ago exactly, we had that moment lived out. So we had just read that. We were just, in fact, the quote you were saying about mirroring the gospel, that was on my list too, because I, like, we were beginning to grasp that. And then all of a sudden, one of my sons about that time was being bullied in school. And like, legit, like from almost like the TV shows kind of bullying, like he, you know, held in the locker room as another kid was kicking him, people squirting ketchup on his head in the lunchroom, like just, it was hard, like crazy hard. And he, you know, coming home in tears and just struggling and even asking us if he could like go back a grade to be in a whole different class. And it was a moment. Mandy and I have always struggled in parenting. You know, we'll try to come up with 40 different ways to fix something, you know, and then we'll pray. But God was really gracious to give us this moment where we didn't know what to do. And so we were on the couch one day and, you know, he had just come in and had a hard day and went upstairs. And so there we are and we're sitting there and I said, hey, let's just pray for him. And so it was just a simple moment, but I just grabbed her by the hands. And I remember her specific prayer. She just prayed as this beautiful, just God, just give him one friend, just one. And it was a new school and it was hard. And she literally, God, just please one friend. And immediately, like at that moment, her phone lit up and it was a friend of hers, a new friend of hers, that said, hey, I've been thinking about it. I would love for our boys to get together. And to this day, wow. I mean, those two guys are close friends. And God's completely changed the dynamic of their class and him. And so God's been so gracious. But he taught us a helplessness, a dependency, a needy heart, that because we couldn't fix that. And so I think, you know, talking about kids earlier, I think especially the early years of raising kids taught us to pray more than anything.
Mm. Wow. What a powerful story. I think on that same note, I sense sometimes in leadership as I'm praying for people that God has, you know, brought into woven ministry, whether it's as a volunteer or a leader or just a participant, sometimes I sense God prompting me. Well, a lot of times, again, I would say it starts with a position of, God, I feel helpless to maybe even encourage, or breathe life into this person or give wisdom to this person or coach this person or whatever it is that they might be seeking in their ministry. And I'll sense God as I come to him, just kind of in that helpless state, giving me specific words, giving me like a word of whether it's like joy or a word of teachability or whatever it might be. And then as I begin to pray those things, what I've sensed God even telling me is to not really go and tell that person, maybe just to kind of continue to pray in secret for that person. And I kid you not, three times this year, it's been really powerful because those people have shared with me, hey, it's been so cool. Got one thing that God has been doing in my life or growing me in or encouraging me in is this. And it's the specific thing I'm praying for. And it's been cool because I feel like God's kind of challenged me to hold my tongue in that and not even to say anything, not even to say like, oh, I was praying that, you know, and make it about me. But really it's this humbling moment of, wow, Lord, like you, and me coming to you in this place of like, I don't know how to even encourage this person. You gave me even the words to know what to pray for this person. And then I got to somehow partner with you in this. And it's this crazy mystery almost, right? Of how we know that our prayers we're not manipulating God. And yet we're partnering with him in this way that we get to see over the course of our lives. So, what are some other stories like that? I'd love to hear more of just things throughout your life where you've seen God's hand at work through the prayers that you, whether it's you and your wife or you and your kids have prayed, or you just personally?
Yeah. Well, as you were saying that, this actually came to mind because something we ask at our seminars is, what are some areas where you tend to not pray for? And it's interesting, the responses, but it really boils down to areas where we think we can do it on our own strength, or we're not going to God because we're not, you know, needy. We're not dependent. And God was, again, gracious to give me a moment. I was doing some marriage counseling with a couple some years back. And I love marriage counseling. I love diving in. I love, you know, unpacking and helping them see things. And so I think God's gifted me in that. And, but this couple, like, there was no breakthroughs. And, something came up and they couldn't meet 1 week. And then something came up the next week and it was 2 weeks. And typically in those moments, I'm like, oh no, like this is not good. This is going to go bad. We're going to derail. And God was teaching me again, the same concept. Like, I'm like, why do I think I can impact them more with my words than I can by praying for them? And so I spent the time we would have met just praying for them. Mm. And that next week they came back and there were crazy breakthroughs. I mean, just God had worked and moved. And I mean, they came just sharing all the things that they realized and what God had done. And all three of us got to realize just God at work. And so they couldn't, you know, I couldn't take the glory and I shouldn't have anyway, but again, just seeing God move in that and see, he does want to use our words. He wants to use our actions, but you know, something you said spurred me on. Like I've learned to enjoy the ministry of prayer, the work of prayer. Mm-hmm. And that's really changed. It's still changing how I do everything, how I do all of ministry.
That's really powerful. I think, to think about, this, how many times do we hear people say, I just don't know what to say. I just don't know what to do. When we see a friend, family member going through something hard, and we feel powerless. And that, again, connects just beautifully to what you're saying. One of the things, in the same kind of area in the book that, I just always come back to is that, Paul Miller writes, if you are not praying, then you are quietly confident that time, money, and talent are all you need in life. Mm-hmm. You'll always be a little too tired, a little too busy. But if, like Jesus, you realize you cannot do life on your own, then no matter how busy, no matter how tired you are, you will find the time to pray. And then it goes on just to even remind us that time in prayer makes you more dependent on God, because there are things that you have to actually stop doing in order to pray. And so, this discipline, we've been talking a lot about this in our ministry this year of the idea of disciplines, and how disciplines are these opportunities that God gives us to create boundaries and create a space for God to do something that we're not actually in charge of, that we are not actually planning, and carrying out on our own. And so I think prayer has become a discipline that I realize there are many times where, I feel this like really urgent sense of all the things that I need to do as the day unfolds, you know, as the day gets going. And without fail, when I pause to spend time, disciplined time, in focused prayer, it is abundantly more fruitful than if I was to, hurry about my day and just continue to go through all the things. And sometimes the fruit is not necessarily that I see a prayer answered, as much as it is that the peace that I have, and just the reassured sense I have that God is at work in this situation, and it does not depend on me and my control of it. So I'd love to talk a little bit about that in the book, because I think one of the beautiful things that Paul Miller does is that he he really takes us on this journey with his family and with one of his kids in particular who has autism, and just the journey of, again, of helplessness, of years of praying things and not seeing fruit. And then God in just unbelievable timing, and just in these moments of him, you know, being so kind and so present to them, he does things that only he can do. And so I'd love to hear from you just some thoughts on, and maybe again, some stories on those, you know, seasons of prayer, maybe where we pray something for so long and we don't have those moments of the text coming through in just the right time. And it feels like, God, why are you not really even hearing me? So I'd love to just kind of dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So I debated on sharing this one because I don't want to, you know, throw a name out there, but I have a really close family member who's not just not a believer, they're agnostic. And so they've struggled, and just in the past couple of years, God's opened up the door for just communication. And I love them. They love me. We're close, but I mean, they've just struggled with this. And so for years, I mean, 20 years, I've been praying for their salvation. And so again, it's not about we actually don't use the word answer to prayer a lot in our ministry. We talk about a story. And so we enter a story when we pray, and it's the Father's story, and it's his timing. And, you know, in the waiting, sometimes we miss the awe and the wonder of what God's doing, because we're looking for him to do it like we want. And like you said, it's not we can't manipulate God or force God to do something. He's not a vending machine. And so this story, I mean, it was long. And honestly, there were seasons where I just wasn't praying, you know, on a regular base, you know, for him. But just this October, I updated my prayer card for him. And I wrote real specific, like, Father, would you just send somebody in his life that he trusts, somebody that would surprise him. And I'd been praying that off and on for a couple of years, but I just wrote it on recently. And so for the past several months, I've been praying that. And so he called me, was it last week, 2 weeks ago, and said, hey, I've got you on speakerphone, and I've got my boss here with me. And we're wanting to ask you about what does hell look like? And so I'm thinking, oh no, this is a setup. It's another buddy of his. They're going to blast Christianity. Like, what in the world? And so, like, immediately I'm going into just silent prayer. Like, God, okay, what do I do here? And so I give, you know, kind of a rambly answer, trying to think through what they need to hear. But then I just point to the gospel, and the boss is on speakerphone. I'm thinking he's thinking exactly like, you know, my relative here. And at the end of this, he goes, that's exactly what I've been telling him. And you know, my relative's boss said, he said, hey, I became a believer 2 years ago, and God's completely changed my life. And I've been sitting here with him and telling him about the reality of hell and the reality of the love of Jesus. And so I told him right then and there with, you know, on speakerphone, I was like, hey, like, I didn't know your name, but I've been praying for you. I've been praying that God would send you into his life. But the story's not over yet. I have no idea still when or how God's going to work, but I'm still praying that God would move and open his eyes to salvation. But I don't have control over that, but I get to be a part of that.
Wow. I love that story. And I love how you brought up this idea of prayer cards. So this is something that Paul talks a little bit about in the book. And I'd love for you just to explain a little bit about prayer cards, because people might be like, what in the world is this, is this like some formula type of thing, which it's totally not. And I think it's a great resource for, and a tool for listeners to use in order to consistently practice the discipline of prayer. So would you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So let me preface with this. So 6 years ago when I read the book, I thought this is an incredible book, but I don't know about this prayer card stuff. I love organization. I love, you know, those kind of things, but to put prayer in some system or formula was the last thing I wanted. And Paul doesn't put it that way, but I fought it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And honestly though, I tried it and failed miserably. 6 years ago, tried it again a couple of years later, still failed miserably. It wasn't until I went through a cohort, 10 weeks of just putting this to practice, that I began getting some rhythm in my life. And so simply what a prayer card is, it's really fancy technology. We use 3x5 note cards.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard of those before.
Yeah. So really hard to get. And we just write, you know, like I might have one, you know, for my son Caleb, but I do have one for my son Caleb, you know, so I'll write Caleb on the top corner and I'll just write little words or phrases that I'm praying for him. That it kind of works like a snapshot. I think the best analogy is like, you see a snapshot of a wedding party. And so you see the groomsmen and the bridesmaids and, you know, all of this. And so you see this picture, but when you look at that picture, it reminds you of, you know, what happened, you know, when the ring bearer fell asleep and, you know, what happened afterwards. And when Aunt Bertha came and, you know, gave you a big kiss and left lipstick, you know, so it leads you to all kinds of places. So the prayer card is not a journal, definitely not some magical prayer tool to make it happen, but it's a way to just track the story. And so for me, especially with my wandering mind, it's been so helpful just to literally begin praying and waiting and watching God work. And I think the biggest help is it's helped me, and I've seen it help so many others, become more attentive and just watchful to see what is God doing in the midst of the story.
We'll be back in just a moment after a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by Chip and Trina Rayburn at Premier Pools and Spas. What started as a small operation in Fayette County has grown, and today they serve much of Central Texas. They are wonderful people who run their business with integrity. We encourage you to consider Premier Pools and Spas if you are in the market for a backyard upgrade.
And now back to the show.
I was sharing a little bit about this before this conversation with you and just said, you know, I had a similar response when I read the book. And one of the things that I have kind of taken away from this has been, I have a couple pages in a journal where I have names and people and family members and friends and areas of the ministry, areas of life, that I pray for every week. And I have, it's now become very layered in the sense that I have things that, you know, I have like a phrase that maybe I started off with at the beginning of the year. And then another in the next month, there's another phrase that God puts on my heart or, but it is what you said of a way to track the story. I love that because what's so sweet is that I am a super forgetful person. And I think most of us really, even if we have a good memory, we can quickly forget the ways that God is and has worked. And so this, you know, kind of tool that we're talking about is a way to begin to track in such a way that you look back and you see these layers of God at work. And sometimes it's these little tiny celebrations, you know, it's even like what you were sharing about with a family member earlier that, you know, you see God at work in these ways over time. And then the tool gives you these kind of, it helps you be attentive to the way that God is writing the story. So it's an awesome way just to kind of reframe the way I think that we think about our prayer. And it's really for, it helps me so much just to kind of continue to direct my prayers and to see how God is working. But the Bible talks about praying without ceasing. And I want us just to touch on this a little bit because, you know, I don't know about many of our listeners, but I think that the thought of praying without ceasing is something I think that we rarely do or that rarely characterizes our lives. But let's just talk a little bit about that. And why do you think prayer is something that often gets pushed to the back burner or that we just very infrequently practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, I think we have to go back to where we started, you know, in the podcast. In fact, I want to read a quote by Paul Miller in the book. It says, "A praying life isn't simply a morning prayer time. It's about slipping into prayer at odd hours of the day, not because we're disciplined, but because we're in touch with our own poverty of spirit, realizing that we can't even walk through a mall or our neighborhood without the help of the Spirit of Jesus." And so, I mean, it's one thing to read that and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But another thing to like begin to get it. And honestly, Whitney, like I'm, you know, when I applied for this job, I was like, hey, I don't have prayer down, but God has grown me so much. And so I've been, I think even in the past few months, growing in this, like, I can't, I'm realizing more and more that literally apart from him, I could do nothing. And that's, I mean, in 44 years of life, that's been my biggest struggle. So I think our struggle with that is because we try to do it on our own. And to enter every conversation, every room you walk into, every situation with a, God, what is it you want to do? Who is it you want me to talk to? Like, who are you putting in my path? Like, just an awareness that the King is at work. Our Father's working, and he is unfolding stories that we're not even seeing. We're not even thinking about. Mm-hmm. Changes the way we pray. And so I catch myself, you know, responding quickly with, you know, strategy or fix it mode. But it's been so fun to learn, okay, God, what do you want? And then often strategy or ideas, the best ideas stem from prayer. And so, yeah, I can't say there's no 10-step process to get there, but
right.
I think the more we try to pray without ceasing, the more we just feel like we're failing. But the more we realize how much we constantly need Jesus, even when we don't think we need Jesus, mm-hmm. the more we find ourselves praying. And not that we don't discipline. I mean, not that we don't have those times set aside. Yeah, I love something Paul says, that one key way to pray more is to pray more. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, there's this beautiful interconnection of how it all fits. But I'm still learning that one. So maybe get me back on in a year. And so maybe I'll have some insights for you.
What else you've learned in a year? Yes. Well, I think one thing that I was sharing recently, we were having a discussion about prayer in the Bible study that I'm a part of. And, you know, we talked about, you know, one of the things that Paul talks about in this book where he says that, you know, just as in a husband and wife relationship or in a close friendship, there are times of both, you know, very like good quality time, deep conversation, prioritized time. And then there are also those times of like just quick connection, a quick communication, a text, hey, we got to talk about this thing. And that you really need both in order for the relationship to be, to thrive. And, or at least those closest relationships. Right. And so, so to think of that in terms of our prayer life and how, you know, I've heard people say, oh man, I feel bad that I just sometimes only pray at bedtime and I'm falling asleep, you know, and that's not a bad thing. You know, that's a sweet thing that we're absolutely invited to get to do with God as his children. But, the beauty of learning to do, to prioritize the time to have quality time in prayer with God, of just really pouring out our hearts to Him. And then also that time throughout the day, I think of even, you know, you kind of mentioned like walking into a room. I think about the times when I am anxious, when I'm worried about something, and, you know, whether it's walking into a situation where I'm not looking forward to seeing a particular person, you know, and it's, I'm invited into a relationship, a fellowship with the Father, where I get to ask Him, even in just a breath prayer, you know, this, in just a moment, a 10 second, God, I need Your grace as I interact with this person. Father, help me, to walk into this, you know, or whether it's a situation of anxiety, God, help me, give my heart peace as I walk into this situation. And so to be able to do both of those, I think is part of the praying without ceasing, where it's kind of more of like woven into the fabric of our lives, versus a compartment of our lives.
Whitney, one example of what you're talking about just in everyday life, and I actually asked his permission to share this. I had a guy in one of my cohorts last fall. And a guy from Colorado, he looks like a lumberjack, like a big bearded guy. You know, all he needs is an axe over his shoulder. So this big guy tells this story 3 or 4 weeks in, and it was such a simple but beautiful story. And he said, you know, the other night he was praying with his 5-year-old daughter, a sweet little girl, and praying with her before bed, and he goes to turn the fan on, and it doesn't turn on. And then, so he fiddles with it. He checks the plug and checks the switch and switches it a couple of different times, and it wouldn't work. And so he looks at her, and then there's this moment of debate in his mind. He's like, he just felt urged to like pray that the fan would work with his daughter. And so we had this panic moment of like, oh no, this is silly, praying for a fan, you know, and God's not a vending machine, and all of these, you know, things going through his head. And like, I don't want to let down her faith, but he did it anyway. And he just grabbed her by the hands and said, you know, sweetie, you want to, let's pray that God might fix the fan for us and make it work. And so he did. And this big lumberjack looking dude with his 5-year-old daughter praying beside their bed. And they just prayed, God, it would be wonderful if you could help the fan to work. You know, whatever that means, just we pray that it works. And they said amen. And he reached up and he flipped it back on, and immediately it worked. And the beautiful piece wasn't that the fan worked, but he had been praying for her faith and her sweet little, specifically that she would just see Jesus clear, the tenderness of Jesus. And so that next day, she's sharing with her little bitty brother, I think 3-year-old little brother, just how good Jesus is. And he cares about little things, even like a fan, and sharing with her mom. And I asked him, I said, Andy, would you have prayed for that a year ago? And he goes, no, not a chance. And I asked the guys why we thought, why would he have not? And his answer was really simple, but I think more profound than not believing or fear of failure or those kind of things. Like, he just said simply, he says, I just never would have thought about it a year ago. And so I love the simplicity of doing life with the Father is not about the big, hard things. It's those also, but it's in all of life. And that's what's been so fun seeing, you know, so many people realize, okay, like prayer is not some fancy thing that we have to get just right. It's just simply doing life with our Father. So that changes everything.
Absolutely. Well, I'd love for you just to talk a little bit more about the resources that A Praying Life offers and how our listeners can engage this material outside of the book.
So Whitney, we have several different ways that we want to come alongside the church. So our heart is not to do ministry for the church, but to partner with the church and to equip and encourage the church. And so we do seminars, which are usually Friday night, Saturdays. And those are a wonderful resource where we really dive and get real practical. They're real interactive. And so they're fun. people just engaging and diving in. And so my oldest son went to a seminar with me, our very first seminar. He's like, Dad, I'm going to be honest. Like, there's no way this long seminar is not going to be boring. He says, you know, I think it'll be great info, but there's not a chance I'm not going to get bored. And by the end of it, he's like, okay, I'm wrong, which is a big, huge step for him. Like, he is not admit that. And so Bob, our director, led that one, and it was incredible. So seminars are great, but really, I think one of our most important resources are cohorts. And so those are online, and we offer those different quarters through the year. And so those are wonderful places to really begin to practice this. And so we walk through the book together, but it's not a book study. It's just walking through some principles, but it's learning to watch and to wait and to share what God's doing. And so it really, I think more than anything, helps us grab hold of it and put it in our lives. And so, those two things are huge. And then some listeners might not know, Paul Miller just wrote a brand new book, came out just a month ago, called The Praying Church. And so we have just begun to do seminars, or Praying Church seminars as well. And then we're going to have cohorts that overflow out of that. And so both are incredible tools. And then some churches, we have about four churches right now that are going through a church discipling pathway where we come alongside them for like 3 years. And not only do all of our training, but we equip their leaders to do that training within their church as well. And so come alongside leadership. And so really act as a coach or a consultant for them. So again, our heart is to come alongside what the church is already doing and be a blessing to that and help cultivate prayer.
That's awesome. Okay. I will put some of this information in the show notes so that our listeners can engage and not only just read the book, but possibly look into ways that they can engage with some of these other resources. So thank you, Adam, so much for being on the show. And I am really excited to share this episode with our listeners. Do you have any final stories that you'd like to share with us today?
You know what? I'll give you one more. And this was actually when I was going through the cohort myself. Just, I was a pastor and just wanted to grow in my prayer life. And so we were about halfway through, maybe 5 weeks in, and we went camping as a family. And I had three different prayer cards that I'd begun praying. So one for one of my sons, he was just wrestling a little with some cynicism, and I was praying for his faith specifically, just to in his prayer life. And so praying for him, I was praying for my wife, that she would see God work in some different areas. And she would just, I don't know, just see his hand at work. And then I was praying specifically for a good friend of ours, again, just for his faith as well, some specific things for him. And so it happened to be that we were camping with them, the good friends. And so they went with us camping in Arkansas. And so there we were. We had just backed our camper up to this little peninsula camping spot. And I just installed a new air conditioner on top, tested it out back home. It worked incredibly, you know, super cold air. We were excited. It was going to be great. It was a really old camper. So we thought, you know, we need good AC in this. And so I get out and go to plug it in, go inside, flip on the AC, and nothing. And so I'm like, oh, no. So I go back out, fiddle with things, and my very limited knowledge, all I could do is flip on and unplug and plug in, and still nothing. And so at that moment, I was starting to sweat because we were setting things up outside, and about to be frustrated. And there was this moment of pause, and I just paused, and I the only thing I prayed literally was just, God, just help. Like, I just need help. Like, that was the end of my prayer. That's all I had in me to pray. And so no kidding, Whitney, So from about 100 yards off the next campsite, this guy, shirtless, probably 70-year-old guy with like an American flag do-rag, comes stumbling down to our campsite. And he comes up and he says, "Hey, do y'all want some stuff?" And we're like, what do you mean stuff? And he's like, I have some camping stuff that I'm getting rid of. And so we're like, sure. And so we wander over to his campsite and he gives us a broken hammock, a Frisbee. And then right next to it, he says, "You can have any of that stuff." And so right there was a 30 amp to 50 amp adapter for campers. And so I kind of smiled and I said, "You're giving this away?" He says, "Yeah, I got an extra one." And so I took that adapter down and I plugged it in. And sure enough, the 30 amp was broken at the campsite, but the 50 amp worked. And so immediately the air conditioner came on. And, I got to share not only with my son, not only with my wife, but also with the buddy as well, that simple prayer of God, I just need help. And so God's been teaching me that simple prayer ever since.
I love that. What a great story to end on. I was thinking, as you were sharing this story, is this guy, what kind of things is this guy offering? I thought the story could go in a lot of different directions.
And now stay tuned for the outro.
Hey gang, welcome to an all new outro with your boy DJ Scar. And my main squeeze, Whitney.
Oh, brother.
I think we should show him what we learned we could do on this thing.
Oh my gosh. No. I will not even be able to speak a word. It's
so ridiculous. We got this new equipment called the Rodecaster Pro 2. It's basically just a soundboard specifically built for podcasting, but I've been tinkering with it and I found out you could do things
like this and like this.
Yep. It's real.
So which one is Tim and which one is Whitney?
You're never gonna guess.
What if we did the whole podcast like this?
Nope, let's not. I don't think I'd be able to be serious. It would be ridiculous.
You sound like you're in slow-mo.
Yeah, you sound like a chipmunk. And we should be done with this.
Okay, we'll put everyone out of their misery.
Man, okay.
Who was that?
Sorry you had to experience that.
That was weird. Our kids got up and they just took over the microphones.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, this week's question is, what would it look like for this ministry to get to the next level? When you think about Woven growing and whether that's in size or just in impact, what does it look like for you and for Woven, this ministry, to get to the next level?
I actually really think about this a lot because I feel like that mentality is something that's like this, you know, this kind of like badge of significance that businesses and even ministries and churches kind of like seek after. And, you know, this past year, one of our themes was growth, and the message that was put on my heart really over the course of this year was for us to continue to look at growth from a kingdom mentality and to not be sucked into the temptation to see growth in the terms that the world defines growth. And so, you know, the world does define growth a lot of times by what is most impressive. As your kids are growing up, there's these kind of like benchmarkers and accolades and sports and trophies and things that, you know, that you see make them look good and in turn make you look good. And then, you know, when you're running a business, you know, there are these increasing numbers and profits and things that you kind of track to mark your success, right? And so, you know, when it comes to a ministry setting, we often just kind of translate that those over of, you know, well, this year we had 50 people at this gathering and next year we have 75. And that's the quote unquote, you know, the mark of growth or the proof of significance or, you know, what gives a ministry success, right? But that again is just kind of taking a business mentality and kind of the way that we think about success and significance in the Western world. And it's kind of taking it and transliterating that just to a ministry. And I think that there's a lot of danger in that, you know? And so you know, people will say even comments like, Woven's, it's just so impressive, or you know, things that like Woven's grown a lot, or these different comments. And but the flip side of this, I think when it's exposed, is when you have an event that, let's say you had 75 people last year and this year you have 50 people, right? So if I'm living by that success mentality, then suddenly the flip side of that, the underbelly of that, is that all of a sudden I'm looking at this current event with 50 people and seeing it as a failure. And I'm seeing it as, man, we must have regressed. But then when I can zoom out, I can look at a lot of the bigger things of, is this an issue of, you know, of us dropping the ball in a lot of ways? Or is God doing something different here? Is God shifting the focus? Is God, you know, was this maybe intended to be a smaller gathering, even though we were hoping for there to be more people? And so there's a lot of things I think that we project onto ministry and what we can project onto Woven based on all these kind of filters that we look at success in the world. And so when I think about, you know, back to your original question of Woven, you know, being, I don't know how you worded it, but the next level kind of, what would that look like for the ministry? And I think that, one of the things that I saw in our focus this year on growth was that I think that there is always a multiplication component happening in a healthier organization. And this is, you know, you can look at this as discipleship. You can look at this as, you know, giving away the good resources that God's given you, like just blessing other people with them, not being a clique or having a hoarding mentality. But I think of it as, you know, if Woven might not grow exponentially in the ways that the world is impressed by. Woven might not, you know, double our income every year. Woven might not double our, you know, the people, how many women come to a retreat every year. But I think that probably a lot, you know, more important indicators are to look at and say, is, and this is a little bit more abstract and harder to kind of track, but keeping a pulse on, you know, is there a multiplication effect that's happening? And I mean like a ripple effect where somebody's life is impacted and then they share Christ with somebody else and in turn someone else's life is impacted. Or even where somebody's really been, you know, their journey has gone from a place of being really kind of isolated to now having a solid community, and they use that not as a platform to, you know, just kind of hoard and kind of become a clique, but rather they use that as an opportunity to bring more people in. And so I think that's kind of intangible, but my hope and prayer, I mean, not intangible in the sense that those are harder, again, things to track or maybe put on like a statistical analysis sheet or something, you know? But my hope and prayer would be that Woven would continue to grow in the ways that matter eternally, that there would continue to be a ripple effect in the community that we're in. And I think one of the things that I would love to see would be if God can use, and I think it's already happening, we're seeing it as people are beginning to use their resources in their own like Bible studies and their own communities outside of LaGrange, or where people are listening to the podcast and being encouraged by the podcast, again, outside of LaGrange. And so what if God is using this ministry here in LaGrange for a greater impact outside of our sphere of influence? And so what if what God is doing here is going to outlive, outlast, and outreach us to places that we could never dream about, or we can never, you know, even maybe we're never going to step foot in, you know? And that's next level in terms of like kingdom mentality. You know, I think about like, even if you would ask that question to like the disciples, the apostles, like, oh, what's it going to be like for, you know, like for the Christ follower, like the movement of the way of Christ to like the followers of Christ, like to reach the next level, you know? And, you know, I think again, the answer would have been, there would have been a parallel of like that God would do a ripple effect, would create a ripple effect through us, that he would reach more and more people through what he's doing inside of us. And as we begin to share and invite people into the community of God and to share the person of Christ with them. And so, yeah, that's my hope and my prayer is, because at the end of the day, we could have, you know, an event with a room full of 300 people and it could feel like, man, we have arrived, right? Because we feel like there's all these people. And I think that numbers can be an indicator of things. Like you're not supposed to just throw those out, like pay attention to those. But at the same time, I would rather have a room full of 50 hungry, generous, gracious Christ followers who are excited about taking Christ to their neighbors and to being Christ to the people around them than a room full of 300, you know, people who are just kind of living that kind of a entitlement mentality of like, well, this is just for me and this is going to stay here and I don't really need to do anything with this, you know?
I'm lukewarm Christianity.
Yeah, just kind of like maybe even a little entitled of like, well, this is what I do and I can't see anything outside of myself, you know? And so my hope would be that we would turn and look outside of ourselves and see the abundant opportunities that are around us while going deeper in our own hearts and in our own walks, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important to distinguish between tracking numbers and statistics and those kind of metrics for the sake of improving versus as a goal.
Yeah.
Some of the healthiest ministries and churches track numbers,
yeah,
as an indicator of some of their impacts and programs and things like that.
Yeah.
But when those numbers become the goal,
yeah,
and the main thing stops being the main thing, then that's where it becomes inverted a little bit in terms of your focus and,
yeah,
what those goals can lead to. So yeah, I think you're onto it.
Yeah. So honestly, I don't know that, I think that we could reach the next level, quote unquote, in the world's eyes and actually be really unhealthy internally and just, you know, be seeking like an impressive status or something, you know, because people could be like, man, like, you have all these followers on, you know, Woman has all these followers, or you sold so many Bible studies, and you know, it's a hard, it's a wrestling, like a internal wrestling match, because I want to do something significant, right? I want Woven to be significant. And I think it already is significant because God is the one who is cultivating and growing up this ministry. You know, I don't need to seek the accolades of the world in order to make this ministry have value. And the more that I seek after those things, actually, the less that I'm focused and my heart is in the right place, where I'm humbly just walking with God and being faithful, you know? Because again, at the end of the day, it really comes down to, am I being faithful to the Lord? And at the end of my life, was I faithful to the Lord? Did I walk with him and walk in step and following him and what he was calling me to do, versus did I do something impressive that the world's proud of, you know? Yeah. I literally think I just saw a mouse run across our floor. I'm not joking you. That was really freaky.
It's probably just a chipmunk.
And we'll end on that note. I think Char has a mouse in the room. I'm not joking you.
If you'd like to know more about this ministry, check out our website at wovenministry.com or download the Woven app to engage on a deeper level. Please take the time to rate and review this podcast. It helps listeners find this feed. But better yet, share Wits End with a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, and production is by Tim Scarborough. We are so thrilled you tuned in today.